I want you. Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Seattle-based jazz singer David Francis. Originally from Philadelphia, he talked about new material that he has out. It includes the 2022 CD, Sings More Songs of the 20s. He opened up about live gigs, COVID life, and so much more. His goal is to give folks a danceable swing music, singing songs made famous by Bobby Darin, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, Dean Martin, Mel Torme, and Sammy Davis Jr. And he's doing that. And he has a great story. Enjoy.
Yeah, how's it going?
Hey, good, man. What's going on?
Yes, I just want to connect to you. I'm kind of getting my two EPs out, actually one album, and signed with that Blue Jazz out of Chicago. You know, it's kind of interesting. I got a residency at this Hotel Sorrento, so I'm there every 2 weeks in Seattle, and now I'm adding another place locally. So, and I've been going around and singing, like I sang in Germany when I was there. I sang in London. I sang in Paris. So little clubs and little. And part of that is to be able to tour and be able to have guys on the ground where when I tour, I have a piano player, a couple piano players deep, a couple bass players deep, wherever I go. So,
right on. Well, I'm glad you reached out to me. I really dug your singing and your style and what you're doing. I guess first and foremost, you kind of opened up a little bit about your albums and what you're doing, but be a little bit more specific about the albums and, you know, when they were released and how people can get them.
Yeah, right now they're on Spotify, they're on Apple, iTunes. There's also some French service, I can't rename the name of it, but there's a couple of different services where they're available. But Apple Music's easy, and Google Music. So I did two EPs. It's basically the songs of the 20s. So the backdrop of this is I was supposed to, right before COVID, do a benefit concert for Haiti. There was a Haiti relief with an earthquake and stuff in Colorado with a real good piano player in them. She's got all this like Latin flair to her play. It's fantastic. And so we had all lined up to do the 20s because it was going to be, you know, it's the 20s, 1920s, or it's the 2020s. So that was the theme that the organization chose. And then, you know, obviously with COVID, put the kibosh on it. But I had put together a whole set of a slew of tunes, and it was really interesting. I was familiar with a lot of these tunes from, you know, later recordings from the 40s, the 50s, even the 60s. And I didn't realize how old some of these tunes were, but they're from the 20s, and there's some good tunes in there. And it really is a good exercise to get to understand composers like Fats Waller. It was really a journey to learn, you know, some of these singers and their stories, and, you know, and the backdrop even to that. Like, so it was interesting to me to learn the tunes. Who are these composers? Who's the lyricist? And to see names pop up over and over again. Wow, Yip Harburg, etc. And so that was it. So I got into the studio and recorded them with some guys out of Seattle. Paul Gabrielson's a well-known bass player out there. He's actually ended up being my neighbor. I met him because we moved over there, and then I see this guy lugging his bass around. I'm like, I think it's Paul Gabrielson. So he played bass on it, and then Milo Peterson played the drums. He's a guitarist, plays a lot of studio stuff, and then and also a drummer, great drummer. And then Karin Kajita, she's an interesting person. She played piano on it. And her and her sisters, they're kind of brainiacs. I play with probably 2 to 3 dozen easy piano players in Seattle and elsewise. And she is by far the best accompanist. So she plays, like if I sing like, San Francisco, she'll play all the orchestral parts. She'll play with dynamics. You know, some guys you get, they bang out the chords, or they kind of plunk them down, or they just comp the same thing, you know, last four, last date, kind of 2-5-1 type intros. And it's kind of like you get the feeling sometimes when you're playing with them that they're thinking about, like, do I need to pick up a quart of milk on the way home? You know, even when they're soloing, you know, it's not their bag. You know, it's like, so trad jazz, maybe they're into, like, I don't know, Chick Corea or something, and I play trad jazz. So she's like the cream of the crop as far as I'm concerned that I've met and played with. So she's on the album as well. So it's all music's from the 20s, and it's really interesting to look and see, you know, what did Peggy Lee do with this? What did Ella do with this tune? Really amazing. And I got a real education on some of these singers. and their stories and their qualities, and even listening to them early and late in their careers, the differences, it's really been an education.
So let's go back in your journey here to the beginning. Are you originally from Seattle, and how did you get into music?
Yeah, back and drop. My mom was a pianist. I never learned to play the piano because I was into the guitar. We, you know, everybody was like, at the time, was like, play the guitar. People like you. Girls will like you and stuff like that. So me and my two brothers cut grass and stuff and saved enough money to get a guitar that we, you know, shared between each other. It's a Brazilian make, a Giannini. It's kind of an odd make. So I learned to play guitar, started out playing, you know, what you would play normally, rock bands and things. Then my I started out going studying engineering, and then I'm like, you know what, I really want to get a music degree. So I went and I had left home. I was 17, and I was playing gigs. I was already playing 4, 5, 6 nights. Once I started on the bass, I looked left or right and said, oh, there's 1,000 guitar players. Nobody wants to play the bass. They'll pay you to play the bass. I'm a bass player. So I started getting gigs. It was real interesting. So I'm from Philadelphia. That's what I wanted to tell you. Outside of Philadelphia, a little town called Bridgeport is a steel town. So when you get up in the morning, you'd see all the guys with their lunch boxes, you know, trotting off to the steel plant. Really good music scene down there. And I was playing. So I said, I'll go to music school. And I did a whole bunch of jobs. I was like working in the bakery. I was teaching lessons. I was playing at night. And I was paying for my own school because I'm one of 7. The kids, you know, the parents didn't pay for stuff. I went to Combs College of Music. That's where Coltrane went. I had no idea when I went there. It just was a local school. I studied with some great guys. Jacob Newpower, fantastic big band guy. Lots of great teachers at Romeo Cascarino. He's the guy who would do doctors. The rumor is that he would doctor Beatles albums, things that when they'd have issues, they'd meet him in New York. He'd help with some of the orchestration on some of those albums. So I don't know how true that is, but he was an interesting guy. I went to Combs College of Music, and at that time, I was just playing whatever gig. It was kind of fun scene. It was a really cool jazz scene. Of course, they paid you to play commercial music, so I played bar mitzvahs. I played for the DuPonts, these big, fancy parties down in Delaware. So PA, New Jersey, Delaware, infrequently New York, but mostly PA, New Jersey, Delaware. Just any kind of gig, like, so I played what they call the outside on the bass, and that meant, like, you know, we actually went to this place called McGlinchey's downtown. It's an Irish bar, and you meet there on Sundays with all the other bass players, all the other players, and you'd say, I got a bar mitzvah and a wedding on this day. I'll give you the bar mitzvah if you give me another date. So you exchange these dates, and that's how I built my book up. But it was pretty wild. Like one night you'd be playing with a country band because the bass player had appendicitis, and the next week you'd be playing with like this Ukrainian band. I jump in a van, I go down to D.C., play at some kind of Ukrainian national shrine, and all the charts are in Cyrillic. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. But anyway, it was a real education. I played with a lot of good guys, a lot of work at all these clubs. They had some really beautiful clubs. And then Grable's down by the Golden Nugget, we played 5, 6 nights down there. So lots of good players. That's how I kind of came up. And the way I got into singing was basically – when I was in rock bands, I said, I fronted and stuff like that, and I like doing that. I wasn't very good. Then when we play in the casinos and things, they'd get a song like Careless Whispers, you know, George Michael, and the one guy would say, I don't want to sing that, and the other guy would say, I don't want to sing that, and they'd say, well, let's make him sing that. So that's how I got playing and singing, and I found I enjoyed it, and I really like being in front. So what I found is, I'm more of an entertainer. I like to talk to people. I like to make sure they're comfortable. They're enjoying themselves. It's not all about me. I'm not trying to be look at me, my art, you know, bow down. You're not worthy. My thing is I want to do my craft and do it well, but then I really want people to dance. I want people to have a good time. I want to make it special for them. That's one of the things about some of these guys like Frank Sinatra. Coming up, I thought, who's this old guy? But you realize he always wore tux. He always did these things because he wanted everybody to say, hey, they're paying good money to come to this. They're scraping it together. I want it to be special for them. I want to show respect for them. And that's the way I feel. I want people to – it's just nothing better than a beautiful summer night when you're playing and people are dancing and they're having a good time. That's what's it for me. So
what was the first live show that you ever saw that really blew you away, live jazz show?
I remember seeing Charlie Hayden, Ahmad Jamal, McCoy Tyner. There was a bunch of things like Bootsy Barnes. I did a WRTI was the, and it still is, the local jazz channel in Philadelphia. Somebody's bass player got sick or whatever, and I got called to play. And at the where they'd have all these bands come down, and it was like Bootsy Barnes and all these like Jamal Dean Takuma, and they'd all play, and I got to be in that, and that was probably the mind bender for me, because I was playing, I went on stage. No charts, didn't know anybody. I had to play something that's live on the radio, you know. So that, seeing the other artists and then seeing just, so for me that was big, because there was free jazz guys there. There was, you know, Freddie Hubbard wannabes and Brazilian jazz guys. It was just a mishmash, Sun Ra types. It was just old school beboppers. So that for me, you know, that's what I'm involved in, but it was just such a mashup. It was very memorable for me.
So what do you like the best about being a performer? What makes you look forward to each day that you get to do this?
Well, I really like entertaining people. I make liking them, making them feel special, making them feel happy, doing the songs they want to do. I love it when the people dance. That's the number one thing. When the room is spinning with dancers, they're appreciating the songs and the stories and the fact that we took the trouble to learn cha-chas and rumbas and merengues and singing Spanish, and you know, and it just, you know, so it's just, it's sweet. It's when I see them remember, or for the first time see a tune that's just beautiful and they're dancing. That's the absolute apex for me, because we just hit the spot. You know, there's a certain magic that happens when the room's moving. So that is. And then for my musicians, the guys I work with, the women I work with, I like the fact a lot of singers are not trained. They're not trained musicians. Some have amazing voices, but when you put a chart in front of somebody, it's just horrible. It's the chords are all wrong. It's in the wrong key. I mean, you name it, it's wrong with the thing. There's no repeats in the wrong place. There's no written out coda. So I take time to work my charts and work my charts to have a good intro, a good outro, a creative and thoughtful, all the right chords, the right melody, the right tempo. I put the composer, the lyricist on it. I make sure that they're really good charts, and that just brings everybody up a level. So I appreciate the musicians. I don't want to give them junk, and then they have to do a karaoke version of stuff. And I got to tell you, I am so appreciative and shocked, really, at the level of jazz talent in Seattle. I don't know how much you know about the scene there, but it's crazy. There must be something in the water. People of all ages, you'll see some kid walk into a jam session in, you know, carpenter pants that went out of style 20 years ago. He's kind of chubby. He looks disheveled. He gets up and he's blowing like you won't believe on the sax. And it's like, what just hit me? You know, so there's such talent. There's so many talented people. So I really appreciate it when, you know, instead of, you know, it's just this person's a singer. They're not really prepared. Oh, it's going to be one of these. You know, let's play a karaoke version of everything. It's the last four, the last eight, the 2-5-1 intro, you know, snore, snore, snore. It's like, I got some nice charts. And there's an art to getting them specific enough that they sing and they're beautiful, but not so complex and you're trying to make it like a cuckoo clock and they're like automatons just executing. So getting them down to a lead sheet that's one or two pages, but then something special about it. That's cool. Even just down recently, the big work has been on, hey, you know, you open the real book, the jazz real book, and it's like Latin, it says, for like all these tunes. Well, what is that? Is that a merengue? Is that a rumba? Is that a mambo? Is that a calypso? Getting that and working with the guys, that's what I'm thinking I'm doing right now, to, hey, the bass part's like this. It's not just a samba thing. It's not just a bossa nova. It's this, and that locks in the groove with this, the clave is not a 2-3, it's a 3-2, and the piano part on Mascenata is like this, and all these things, when they fit together, the room is like a whirling dervish. The dancers it just cues them all, and it all works nice. So just working our way through that and the varied rhythms, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I really appreciate it when there's a certain magic you can hit when the chart's right, when the musicians are right, when they're appreciative, when everybody's listening to each other, working off each other. It's just beautiful. So that gives me a lot of joy, too.
So as we do kind of return to live music, more things wake up. What do you hope we all realize about the power of live music?
it just can bring so much joy. I'll never forget, like, the last gig I did, there's two or three people there that are obviously, they're very introverted, almost maybe on the spectrum or something. And they connect with the music. That's one thing Combs was known for, is Combs College was for music therapy. And I do these gigs, these charity things with musicians in these retirement homes, or we did before COVID, and we're starting to pick that back up. But just to see somebody who's sitting there slumped in their chair, hasn't talked to anybody in ages, you play a certain tune, they pop up, they start singing, they start dancing. You know, you can say, well, that's a special case, but I think it's the same for everybody. There's some way to connect with music that tells a story, that makes you feel connected, that puts you in a special place, even just for a moment. Because the world has been hard for a lot of people with COVID and lots of other stuff. To bring about some amount of unity, a feeling of connectedness, even if it's ephemeral, even just for one night, that's really nice.
So everyone has a perception of you, an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life, you have a perception of yourself. Who do you think you are?
I don't know. I just think I'm a regular guy. I just want to make music that people want to listen to, put on when they're having a barbecue, when they're having a nice romantic dinner, when they're just, I just want it to be easy, like a pair of old slippers. I'm not looking to impress anybody. It's funny, my piano player, we're in the studio and we're looking around. There's all these CDs, 800 or so CDs on all the walls, and 99% of them are women, and that's great. And so I'm like an odd duck. I'm like, I do trad jazz. I sing these American standards, and I'm not female, and which is, you know. But it's funny because when you look at all the CD covers, they're like, you know, they're laying back with a rose in their teeth on the piano and all these kinds of poses like that. And my piano player would make a great straight man, because I made a joke to her. I said, hey, maybe I should do that. I should like lay back with a rose and piano and, you know, show off my chest or something. And she said, oh, I don't think that's advisable. You know, so I like the fact that I feel like I'm filling a gap, because they're singing in a baritone. These songs are beautiful. You have this whole history of these guys like Johnny Hartman, just sing so angelically, so beautiful, that nice, warm baritone. And if I can just do that and take these beautiful songs and keep them alive, make them entertain with people, I just think that's how I think of myself, that I can entertain. I'm not trying to make everybody love me or stuff. I want them to feel good and connected to the music and good about their evening.
David, thank you for reaching out. Thanks for taking a minute out. Good luck with everything as we move forward.
Yeah, I super appreciate it. It's been super sweet of you to take a look at me, and I appreciate it. I won't forget it.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest singers in Philadelphia, Seattle, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to David for his time, music, and stories. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. And finally, everything Joe Domino related, go to JoeDomino.com. And if you feel like it, you can kick in a few bucks to the Neon Jazz cause. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.